Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining me this week on Tia Time. We'll get to the show in just a moment. First, I wanted to say thank you to all of you who have posted a rating on Apple Podcast. Apple Podcast is an app that can be downloaded to your phone or computer. The algorithm it uses allows more artists and art enthusiasts like yourselves to hear about the show. So if you haven't posted a rating yet, do it now. Thank you. On with the show. Welcome to Tia Time with Artists, the weekly podcast where we discuss the methods, challenges, and real-life experiences of living our creative dreams. What kind of creative warrior are you? Musician, filmmaker, painter, choreographer, poet, sculptor, fashionista? Let's talk about it right now. I'm your host, Tia Imani Hanna. Welcome to Tia Time with Artists, and this week my guest is artist, actress, exceptional human being, instructor as well of the arts of acting, Kimberly Krushan Brooks. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. My pleasure. Thank you so much, Tia.
So, yeah, we were just chatting offline here about how the names get put into the database, the IMDb. And you said that stands for, what does it stand for again?
Internet Movie Database. If you are any actor worth your salt, you have created your own page, but also it's a great place to go if you've got that trivia question. What movie was Tom Hanks in where he had the volleyball? That's all. Every big star is on that because it's got their representation, their agencies, all the films they've done. So you want to be on that if you're serious about your career.
Now, has that always been the case? Because the internet hasn't been around so for more than 30 years at this point. What did people do before that? Just Variety or something?
There were stone tablets and they... in the old days, and I certainly go back to that, if you were performing in something or you were going to be in a premiere of a film, you sent out your headshots or you had cards made and you mailed them to all the agencies. Come see me. I'll have free tickets for you. Yada, yada. It was all snail mail.
Wow. For that mail.
Or you got signed with as many agencies as possible because you're paying them to put you out there. You got a manager or a publicist. But boy, with social media, you are your own president and CEO now of your own company. Okay. And this is why I forgot to have kids to help me out on this.
I forgot.
I looked at my watch and it was just, oh dear, where'd the time go? So, you're right. There's others that I had to keep abreast of, something called Actors Access, casting networks. These are other places that you create. You put your demo reel on, your headshots, your resume, and now your agent will send that off to casting agents. Mm-hmm. Everything was snail mail before that. It is amazing what we can do now. And I'm barely Dropbox. I have finally conquered. So I'm just on the, I'm the one, lagging behind on my tricycle.
Well, you're not alone. Believe me. I think the whole pandemic thing has set everybody into this digital world in mass. So we're all trying to catch up right now. So it's okay. It's going to be fine. You're quick and you're smart and you'll get it. You'll get it.
Yeah.
Before I started doing this podcast, I had never worked with Zoom. And I have another platform that I use. It's called Squadcast because it has a thing for podcasters. So I use that a lot. And then I use Zoom sometimes like we're using today. And yeah, it's just it's a different animal. I just never thought that this was possible. I remember back when I used to watch the Mike Douglas show and the Dinah Shore show and all those TV shows, Phil Donahue and then up to Oprah and just over time, all these shows. And this, I could do that. I could do that. But I'll never get a chance to do that. And I can do that. A year and a half now it's been since COVID started. I started this and we're almost at a year and I've done my show. It's unbelievable.
That's awesome. So it took COVID to push the baby robin out of the nest for you then.
I just never even thought about it. It was like, oh, okay, I guess I could do that. And then, but what happened was in the last three to four years, the technology has improved that much that now I can actually afford the technology. Like before you had the technology, but I couldn't afford it because it was like, oh, you have to buy this thing, and that's $8,000 and this is $4,000. And then you have to have somebody edit and da 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 da. Now there's technology where I can do all of that with one little app that I bought or I rent. And So it's just improved so much that now I can literally do all of that by myself. So I don't have to have a crew. It's unbelievable. The world has changed.
Yes. And we have to change with it. There's a lot of people that kind of retired or dropped off or they barely have an email account. It's just overwhelming. And they, you know what? I'm done. And it's too bad. I'd like to think I can still learn. I have to learn by doing. I'm very visual and I have to do it. Once I do it, I get it now. Mm-hmm. But if you talk Greek of all of these strange technical terms, I have no clue what you're talking about.
I know. I remember when I used to have my first computer, which was only in 96, maybe? No, 98, somewhere in there. Because again, I was a struggling musician. I couldn't afford it. I couldn't afford a computer. I didn't, dial-up was still happening at that point. Remember dial-up? You're just like waiting, it's like ringing and you're like, oh, connect, So nobody had a cell phone yet until 2000 and something when people started to get cell phones because they cost $1,000 a month or some crazy thing like that. And nobody could do that. Things have changed. People used to, when I lived in New York, if somebody was standing on the corner talking to themselves out loud, you thought they had issues. It's normal.
He's not a sociopath. He's not a homeless person. Oh, good. Oh my.
Yeah, but I think the first time I saw somebody talking on one of those Bluetooth things, it was brand new and it was in New York. So it was like the tip of the, everybody has the newest thing. And this guy was outside talking. He was ranting and he's walking back and forth. Everybody was looking at him like, what's going on with that dude in the corner? He's talking to himself. I don't know. And he had a Bluetooth in and everybody's, oh, he's got one of those new things. Everybody thought he was nuts. I can remember very distinctly like how much that's changed. You know, it's amazing the technology and things have changed. Now, didn't you do recently a web show or something that weren't you a part of a web series? Now that's a whole new world.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And the different platforms on that in that arena alone, where if it's adult language, well, okay, you're on a different platform. Or now, oh no, everything, anything can go. Okay, then it's got to go in that direction. Yeah, I think something was called, was it YouTube Red?
Yeah.
Or YouTube Blue?
Something, yeah.
Adult stuff or colorful language, so to speak. And I don't even know if those exist anymore. I have no idea. Because
I don't think they do.
Facebook Watch or just Facebook is one of the web series that I'm on called Chair Gang. And that's pretty strong language there. And there was no, we weren't banned. We weren't kicked off. We weren't, oh, you're in jail. No. So but that's a great way to be seen. It's a great way for Netflix to look at something that gets a big following because they're looking at the viewers. They're looking at the followers that puts tickets, that puts seats in the house to watch it. They're going to pay for it. They're going to rent it.
Well, so, how did you get involved in that project? Because that's like you've done major theatrical or film productions and things. How did you end up on a web series? Like what?
Believe it or not, and a lot of these things are a hooey kind of thing. I had no idea about any auditions, but a girlfriend of mine, she's an actress, she's wonderful. She gets all the soccer mom roles and I get all the mean girl roles. long hair versus scary spiky. Mm-hmm. The director wanted her to read for this role. And it was like, no, that's just, I've got a friend who would pull this off. Hooked me up with the director, just like this. It was Skyping, I think, at the time. Because FaceTime wasn't invented yet. And I auditioned for her and it was like, oh, you are in. It's like, oh, okay. And we literally filmed it every single Monday, like a series. It was a lot of fun. There's four series and she has since moved to New York. She's doing, the director who was also a character is doing something entirely different now. There was a lot of marketing that she was doing on her own. And I said, I'd love to help you, but I know nothing. You will have to teach me. or show me what to do. Because everything is now, you got to do it yourself. And you know that. But there's four seasons on Facebook Watch called Chair Gang, the series. Think of The Office in a beauty salon.
Okay.
Somebody says something absurd and we would look into the camera like, what the heck was that? And a shaky kind of documentary style shooting. A lot of fun. There's another web series that I'm on, and that was a Who You Knew, that, oh, Kim will be perfect. And then all of a sudden I'm contacted. It's like, thank you very much. It's called Gigs. And right now there's a production company in New York and LA that are very interested in this. Hmm. And we just filmed like the sizzle reel of what the whole series would be about. And it's a frustrated musician who can't get work as a musician, but he was hot like 30 years ago.
Okay.
And now he's got grown daughters or teenage daughters that are, and he can only make money by having people rent his studio in the basement. So he's got to be the sound engineer. So you get these terrible singers, horrible rappers. I am his nosy, overbearing, but meaning mother.
Okay.
So and right now there are certain episodes on, but he's put together a big, beautiful one that's not released yet, but it's called Gigs.
Okay.
And there's a lot of music in it. And if you're a musician, oh my gosh, it's amazing. And it's funny. It is funny. And I sound like I'm biased, but if it can make me laugh, it's gotta be funny.
Okay. So,
but thank you.
Yeah. No, that's fabulous. So what was it that started you? What was the first thing that clicked you into the world of drama? Were you a dramatic person? is that by nature or were you shy?
I was a very strange old soul child.
Okay.
I remember turning 5 the morning of my 5th birthday. I got up and ran to the mirror looking for my wrinkles. Oh my gosh. And I don't think it was vain. I just felt so old. And then my dad pulling me on a sled at Belle Isle on my 10th birthday, because I'm born in January, and I was sitting on my sled, and here's my dad pulling me, slipping and almost falling, and I'm thinking, I am double digits. I am 10 years old. I'll never be a single digit number again. I felt ancient. So I wasn't necessarily dramatic. I was just, because now I'm a kid. I'm a 12-year-old boy in my head. But it wasn't until middle school, 8th grade, that the English teacher literally started that year the drama club. Mm-hmm. And I think because teachers seem to know when they have a glut of kids that might be good for a certain show, and then they know what shows to give to the board, like we want to do Annie or we want to do whatever. And I had her in my English class and she said, you must audition for this crazy musical. But the hitch was, and I had no idea, but I was the only comic relief in it.
Oh,
think Carol Burnett as the cleaning lady. That was my character.
Okay. Okay.
Except I was a little old lady because I'm 8 feet tall. Every time I came out, and I wasn't trying to be funny, the lines were written very well. And it was a lot of physical comedy that I could do. And I had to tangle with the lead. Just crazy stuff, but everybody's laughing. And I'd walk out, I hadn't opened my mouth, and I can hear, you know, the little old ladies, oh, look, there's that cleaning lady again. And it was like, this is fun. Mm-hmm. And I'm making everybody laugh. So yeah, that bit me right there. So it continued, went all through high school. I won a scholarship at Eastern University, unbeknownst to my parents.
This is here in Michigan.
Yeah, here in Michigan.
Okay.
And my mother ruled the roost. And when she found out, it was, how are you going to make a living in drama? So under that peer pressure, I just went, okay, then now what am I going to do? Mm-hmm. So I went to work. And then about 6 years later, it was like, bye-bye, I'm out of here. I moved to California, to LA.
Okay.
And all by myself, I'm not a trust fund baby. So I had to work 9 to 5 just to afford stuff. But I did a lot of theater. And rather than going to college to get an MFA, this is where all my training was.
Okay.
From private coaches, workshops, because you have Stella Adler Studio, Uta Hagen Studio, Pasadena Playhouse would have classes. I mean, they're everywhere in LA.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You can audit classes. It was amazing. So I just ensconced myself in getting all of this for years while doing theater and while working 9 to 5. It wasn't until moving back here to Michigan to marry a childhood sweetheart, or my current husband, as I tell him, and that's the irony of getting so much film and web series and more theater and more work here than in my 12 years in LA, in probably 3 or 4 years here. Mm-hmm. I had more work in that minutia of time versus LA. Bizarre. Who knew?
Oh, yeah. You have to leave and come back to be the star. It's very strange. Yeah. Same thing. I lived here and tried to work in Detroit area for decades. Then I moved to New York. I'm there for a decade. I come back and all of a sudden I'm like I'm the thing. You were in New York? Wow. Oh, yeah, I was. Yeah. Okay. Yes, I went from New York. I know what I'm talking about. What the heck? You haven't really changed that much. Okay. But
notice people on the outside. Mm-hmm. We've done something that I could never do that. It's like, yeah. If I can do it, you can do it. Oh, no. What do you have to lose? What do you have to fear? What's the worst case scenario? It doesn't work out. You go back home. Or you go to another place.
Right.
I could never understand. I've always been like a lone wolf. It sounds like maybe you are too.
Yeah.
There's nothing. What's keeping you back? Now, granted, if you were married with children or you have a mortgage, well, that's a different story. Mm-hmm. But they're almost envious. And there's no need for envy. If this guy hadn't looked me up, I would still be living and dying in L.A. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's just a fluke. This is my home. I was born here, but this was not where the work was. Right. And now, of course, everything's changed for you. And this is a smaller pool, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
It is.
Yeah,
it is.
And you said you're a musician, right? You said?
I'm a jazz violinist and vocalist and composer.
Oh, what a great hybrid that is.
Yeah. So it's fun. You do what you do. And now I do podcasting. Yeah, exactly. It's whatever you're going to make it work that week, that month, that day. And I think that's the part that people don't realize is that you do have to jump off and say, okay, I'm going to do this thing right now. And while I'm doing that, I might have to do these 10 other things too, which of course, if you lived in LA or New York, you know that you have to do that. I came back because I was like, I survived 11 years out there and I was tired of just surviving. So I came back here. But that's okay. And, stuff happens.
Absolutely. Stuff happens. You kept some, friendships, I'm sure, or relatives. It mm-hmm. wasn't like I'm a loser because I had to go back home. Right. No. And there is no definition of failure. Mm-hmm. We put a definition on it because it's very personal to us. And we shouldn't. To me, I always just tell myself there is no such thing as failure. It's trying. And then you try something different.
I agree. I agree completely. Because I think about all the people that I used to know when I lived in New York, most of them have left because you had to. 2008 happened and everything crashed. When 9/11 happened, that changed everything. Gosh. I was living across the Brooklyn Bridge. I was living in near Prospect Park, which is now the IT neighborhood. It wasn't the IT neighborhood when I was there. And then my rent, I had this little tiny studio. It was lovely. I loved my little place. Went from $500 a month to $1,500 a month. And I said, I live in the same space. What happened? Why is my rent so high?
Wow.
This is a 5-story walk up. And it was a slanted roof. It was literally the French artist garret. It had a sunroof in the middle of it. So it was sweltering. The windows were only yay big. So you could, but why is my rent keep going up? I haven't gotten more space.
Really? What am I paying for?
Yeah. But after 9/11, everybody moved across the bridge because they were all afraid. So they moved across the bridge and all the rents went up. All the brownstones started selling. They started out $100,000. They went up to $1.5 million in a couple of months. All the rich people who were over there moved over because Park Slope is where all the writers and everybody lives. So that was the place. I was like, okay. Several places closed down. New places moved in as far as off of 7th Avenue there. And it was a crazy world. And I'm like, I survived all of that. And I didn't leave until 2009 after the big crash happened. And it was like everybody lost their jobs. And it was like, I can't, what am I going to do? So I had to leave. But it was a good thing because now I came here and my little, the amount of money I was paying out there, here I came here and I bought a four-bedroom house with the backyard and had a brand new car. And it's, oh, wow.
There's perks.
It was great. So, you know, I'm like, wait a minute. I'm not really making any money at all. How was I able to do that? Because I left New York. So, okay.
Same with LA. I've got a girlfriend that lives in a maybe 1,400 square foot house that she can sell for $900,000. And I said, you would have a mansion with servants here for that. Okay. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Get rid of that place.
It's crazy. But now, because COVID happened, the markets have all changed. Now people are paying anywhere from $30,000 to $100,000 over asking price for houses. And you're like, what?
Yeah. What is up with that? Yeah. What kind of weird? It's not even a bubble. It's just, how long is this going to last? That's nuts. Granted, it's a seller's market, but then where are you going to go? Because you want to pay
that. That's the thing. I don't understand how that, where are these people moving that are selling? Where are they going to? And how can they afford it? And I don't know. Because recently tried to buy a few houses and we literally saw it within an hour of seeing it. It was sold. We couldn't even put it in an offer. So it's okay. So we're just going to wait it out and see.
Wait this one out. Yeah. That's all we can do. Yeah. Short of you're retiring to your cottage that you already had and you're going to now live out your days there. Okay. You had a second abode, but otherwise, oh no, that's no. Crazy.
Well, just talking about all of this and how all of our, I guess, sinuous kind of journeys to get to where we're going as artists. What's your take on all of that? Is because you've gone through, you've worked in LA. I mean, that in and of itself is an experience, working and living in LA. And then you come to Michigan during this bubble of craziness and you're working here. Tell me a little bit about that experience, how getting there and working in LA and then as opposed to working here, how has that been different?
Oh gosh. I remember I was a travel agent for about 14 years. And the first time I went to LA on an American Airlines weekend, it was upon landing. It was, these are my people. This is where I need to be. Okay. Oh my gosh. Everybody's pretty. Everybody's thin. I hate them. But wow, the weather. And I'd go flying back and here's flat old Michigan, industrial. Mm-hmm. Everybody's pale. Nothing was hip or groovy or fashion or nothing. It's the Midwest. It's the Midwest. Pros and cons to both. But it was, if I really want to be serious about an acting career at that time, this is in the 80s, mm-hmm. It's New York or LA. And really, I want to go someplace that's colder than here in the winter. No. And don't want to be a soap opera actress either. So off to LA I went, was there 12 years. Getting an agent, ridiculous. It's who you're related to or who you're dating, basically. Mm-hmm. It's impossible. It's impossible. You have to have a connection.
Okay.
I can't tell you how many times I tried. So I ended up doing more theater, but also at that time, because I've shrunk, I was like 5'10". There were no Sigourney Weavers, Gina Davis. There were no tall actresses mm-hmm. on film because Dustin Hoffman is 5'6". I walked by Tom Cruise, 5'7", if that. Mm-hmm. So theater, sure, stage presence, let's do that. So I did tons and tons of that. Earthquakes are not fun at all. Give me a tornado any day.
Okay.
But regarding the industry, because acting is the mecca out there, you never know who you're going to meet or bump into. And therein lies a lot of connections, mm-hmm. which is awesome, but also strange ones. Hey, you're invited to Gary Busey's birthday party, the dog walker's cousin's second ex-wife. So you have an invite. But, okay. All right. I guess I'm going. Okay. because somebody knew somebody else. Then coming back here, the move, literally, if you moved to LA, there were classes at UCLA that were, what was the name of them? It was like how to adapt to LA living because of the 6-lane gridlock drive. You sat there for, it made me become terminally early anywhere. You got to leave a day before to get someplace on time in LA. Mm-hmm. Moving back here was like, oh, there are no traffic jams. I-75 and I-94, that's nothing. Go to LA. It's crazy. Right. But for work, what was so interesting is to get signed at an agency here is simple. You might have to wear them down a little bit and keep knocking at the door, but the agencies here, everything is under one umbrella. Mm-hmm. Your print work, voiceover, film, television is all under one agency, not in LA. You have to get a theatrical agent. You have to get a manager. You have to get a TV agent. Mm. So that's what's so hard. So it's that simple here. This is cool. And of course, the audition pool. I tell my students, you're going to get a lot of rejection. Mm-hmm. My skin is the thickness of a rhino from the rejection that I received in LA. Mm-hmm. You can, what's now is called backstage.com, used to be a magazine called Dramalog that you subscribe to. If you were a serious actor, you got it every week and it had all the auditions in it, casting calls, just everything. And then some would be very specific, 5'10", 35, brunette, hair, big brown eyes, show up at this date at this time for a featured film role. Okay, cool. My God, you're describing me. And you show up and they slap you with number 6,522 on your chest. Mm-hmm. And you walk into a room full of clones of yourself, mm-hmm. going, what in the world? They make 10 of you get up on the stage. You stay, the rest of you, thank you very much. Didn't even get to open your mouth. They don't even know your talent. Mm-hmm. So here, now when I go to audition, hi, Nina, hi, Colleen, hi, Kathy, hey, how's the wife and kids, how's your puppy, blah, blah, blah. We all know each other.
Okay.
We're all good friends. The pool is much, much smaller. There's still a lot of work here. Mm-hmm. Industrial films we have here that are not so much in LA because of the big three, because of cars, because we are an industrial state.
Right.
They need actors for training films for their 18,000 employees. It's only going to be seen by the employees, but I'm laughing all the way to the bank. Who cares?
Exactly. Exactly.
The indie film industry is a hotbed here. Mm-hmm. The Christian film industry is a hotbed. I've been the voice of Covenant Hospital. If any of your listeners are north of Saginaw, I've been in your car and in your living room because I do all of the radio spots and all of the, I'm the announcer on all the commercials. Been doing that for about 6 years. So I can go shopping at the grocery store and not be hit up for autographs. It's fine. It's fine. So there's a ton of voiceover work here too. So it was amazing. It was almost, you're obscure in LA because it's so huge, but it's so beautiful. That's why it's called La Land. Mm-hmm. Time, there is no time there because there's no seasons. Okay. So all of a sudden, 4 years have gone by, but there's blue skies and beautiful sun, la, la, la. And yeah, it's very fooling out there.
Okay.
You can get lulled into a false sense of, yay, I'm young and I'm pretty and I can wear tight things as long as I'm thin. It doesn't matter how old I am. And here from Michigan, there's a sense of tradition and values. People go to church. Families have Thanksgiving dinners. Not so much in LA. It's a far more liberal state. There's churches, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But also the opposite of, if you're a worker, you don't stay at a company for 5 or 10 years. No, every 2 or 3 years, you're climbing up the ladder. Mm-hmm. Here, it shows loyalty. Oh, you've worked for Ford for 30 years. Yes, you're loyal. You know, how dare you hop, skip, and jump? That means you're flaky. Right. So just the work ethics, very different. The traditions, the values, even the dating scene, the starving actor and actress syndrome. Really? You have a bank account? Oh, that means you're rich. No, I got $450 in my bank account. What are you talking about?
I remember that. I remember dating someone and saying, she has a car? She must be rich.
Oh, yeah. I had one date. It was, Kim, you got to come over here because I have fumes for gas in my car. Okay. And can you bring some steaks? Oh, that's why he's an ex.
Yeah. I've had invitations like that. Yeah. That. Yeah.
I think I answered your question. I'm not sure.
You did. So, all right. So you came here and you have an actual life here, as opposed to just slogging through the crap in LA. So you actually have a decent state of living here as well as good work.
Yes. I had the apartment with my cat versus now it's a home. Of course, that's with the help of my husband. He is a retired teacher. However, he's a retired art teacher. Mm-hmm. My first husband was a musician. So I think the arts definitely attract each other. It just doesn't have to be in the same genre. But, oh, yeah. And again, the earthquakes. Oh, no. Lordy, no. I had crystal that had been bubble wrapped for 12 years because I didn't dare take it out of the box of the bubble wrap because it was going to fall and crack and break in an earthquake. It's like, yay, Michigan doesn't shake, rattle, and roll. This is wonderful. And I missed the niceness of the people here. In LA, it's, I think, the waiters, the wait staff, they're like New York. They got attitude. They got a script in their back pocket because they're an actor or a screenwriter. And they think that maybe you could be their next best friend because you must have a connection somewhere. And they're rude. And if you look like you don't have much money, they will ignore you, like in the film Pretty Woman, where they judged her. It was so refreshing coming back here and just noticing people are nice. They don't cut you off in traffic. They are polite and say, hi, how's your day? Would you like some more water? They're just nicer here. So what had killed me was missing my bloodline of my gal pals. It's not, hey, let's go to Starbucks. Oh, wait, you're 3,000 miles away. I was quite depressed for maybe the first 6 months. I'd move 3,000 miles again to be with the person who I'm with, but my girls, my tribe, that killed me as much as I still kept friendships here, which I'm sure you did too. Mm-hmm. You stayed in touch, phone calls, letters, and now email and FaceTime.
It's just not the same thing.
Oh gosh, no, you want a hug. You want that energy. You want to grab their face. Yeah, no, right. It's not. It hurts. I try to go back at least every year. Of course, COVID. Never mind there. But it took me a while because I went right back to work doing 9 to 5. And then come, what was it, 2001, when the auto suppliers went to the wayside and Detroit went bankrupt. Then I was laid off. And then it was like, okay, I'm going to pursue acting on a full-time basis. Let me get signed with the agencies because you cannot have a full-time day job. So now I've been a professional actor for probably 25, 30 years now.
That's great.
Yeah, gosh, where'd that go? And auto show loves actors, the auto show circuit, because you're not afraid to talk to people and you can memorize a lot of text.
Yes.
So I got swooped up by Cadillac for about 4 or 5 years. Which was great fun, but then it was, no, I miss being home and getting ensconced in. I'd have to always bug my agencies. I'm sorry, I'm doing the Houston Auto Show for 10 days. I'll call you when I get home, then send me to auditions. So I couldn't really pursue my acting in doing that, but it paid bills and it was a lot of fun. No, they put all the old horses out to pasture after a while. But now, what's great about acting, they need you at every stage of your life. Mm-hmm. Look at Betty White. She's 150 years old, for God's sake.
It's true.
They need her somewhere.
I'm
not sure if she can memorize lines, but God bless her. She's alive. Mm-hmm. And yeah, now I'm doing mothers. I'm doing grandmothers. I'm queens. I'm doing nosy neighbors. The more fun roles, villains. Yay.
Yeah.
They need you as a baby. They need you as a you know, octogenarian. And for a musician, hello, as long as you can see notes, I would imagine, and hold something, the instrument, you're good to go for.
You keep going until you can't. That's basically what that is. It doesn't even matter. It's just, you're just going to keep doing it until you can't do it anymore. And that's one of the traps that happens to a lot of musicians. We end up working at music stores and we don't make a lot of money. You end up in a music store and you end up buying other instruments. And after a while, and those are not cheap, and you buy lots of them. And then you go, oh, what am I doing? So I have 10 instruments I can't play. But... But it's just part of the thing because it makes noise. You're like, it makes noise. I gotta have that. You know?
That's my primal outlet, for God's sake.
It's gotta use it somewhere. And I'm sure there's things like that for actors. Oh, there's this new microphone, or there's this new course that's happening that does this thing, or there's a teacher that's coming and lecturing on this. Whatever, you know.
Absolutely. And so. And right now the current trend is how to make better self-submissions, because we've all had to learn how to tape ourselves because the agencies are closed. Mm-hmm. You normally got an email, hey, can you make an audition tomorrow at 2:00, blah, blah, and I would drive to the agency. They would film me. Done deal. Now, oh no. Oh my gosh. I have to slate. I got to make the phone pan my whole body. Uh-huh.
Right.
And then you do the link, Dropbox, make sure you say this and that, make sure you're well lit, make sure you don't have a fan spinning over your head like me right now, make sure, and we never had to worry about that before. Mm-hmm. So some are actually teaching classes on how to create the great background, mm-hmm. what the best lighting, I've got a ring light right in front of me, gotta have that. This stuff you never like, really? But okay, I've got to stay on par. I think also the older an actor gets, if you can't do, then teach. But I've had to miss classes of my teaching because I might have a gig. I might have a job. Right. Sorry, I can't teach this weekend. I'm doing something. I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. So I'm not to that point yet that the phone's not ringing anymore. I'm not getting any emails for auditions. But that's so interesting to hear that... Musician never dies. They just keep buying instruments.
Right, because you just don't know if you write, because some people compose and some people don't. But it's like that ukulele sounds a certain way. And in this song, I need a ukulele. Instead of me hiring a ukulele player, which you're probably going to end up doing anyway, but I can just mess around with it and get enough of it myself. Because you have this thing of, I have to be the one-man band, because that's the way you go when you're struggling at anything. You have to do it all. So you just start to work that way. I think now as I'm getting older, I'm starting to say, okay, how can I collaborate with somebody else to get the same thing without me having, because I don't have time anymore. I have less time to live. So how can I get the same thing without me having to learn this? And I do have a little bit more money because I've been doing this longer. So maybe I can spend $20 and do that instead.
Very sobering to realize we're at a point where there are less years ahead versus behind. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to even to admit that or say that, but time is, we're at the end of the toilet paper roll. It's going by real fast. If you got anything on a bucket list or something else you want to do or try while we still have some kind of health and can walk and can think, we got to do it. We got to do it. Because blink and what happened? I'm sure you're doing this. Yeah, that was 2 years ago. And then you look it up. Ooh, it was six. What happened?
Right.
What is wrong with that? Yeah. Pursue your dreams. Do it. I think I got to have a lot of my dreams come true. Mm-hmm. I moved. I can say I did that. I did what I could out there. I have no regrets of anything. And I would like to say that anybody who has regrets, oh, woulda, shoulda, coulda, you got to go back, put yourself in your shoes at that time. Mm-hmm. And realize you made the best possible decision that you possibly could, given all of those elements at that time. Mm-hmm. You can't do this of hindsight. Oh, why didn't I know? You cannot live your life with regret. Look back and go, I made that decision because this wasn't happening, or that door didn't open. And it was the smartest, best thing I could do at the time. I tell that to so many people.
Oh, yeah. It's such a key lesson. One of the games I always played with myself was Queen of the World. And is if I was Queen of the World, what would I be doing right now? And so it's that takes away all of that level of crap that we throw on top of everything and say, wait a minute, let me move all that out of the way. So what would I be doing if I didn't have any of these issues? And then I go, would I be doing the same thing or be doing something different? And if it's something different, then I'm like, okay, let's go do that thing. If it's not, it's then you're fine where you're supposed to be. So it just immediately takes that away. But I've been playing that game with myself for years. And then the other one is Time Machine. And you look back and you say, like you said, you have to go back and say, if I had just done that thing, and then they say, okay, let's walk back through that. I said that out loud, so let me go back and look what was really happening at that time. This thing didn't exist yet. This didn't exist yet. This didn't exist yet. This didn't exist yet. That person wasn't born yet. This is, you know. So you couldn't have possibly done this thing. Oh, okay. Never mind.
Right. Yeah. We lose perspective and we forget a lot of those, the good memories and the bad memories. And it's a very realistic take. You've got to be very honest with yourself, but you do. And then realize, I'm fine. Yeah. I did the best I could at that time. Yeah. If anything, people that, you know, oh, I could never do what you did. And I said, well, guess what? You're going to be sitting in your rocking chair wishing you did the things that you didn't do. I would rather sit in my rocking chair and regret, oh, I probably should never have mooned those boys in that convertible that one time because they followed us off the freeway. But boy, it was fun.
Right.
So yeah, you want to regret the things you did, not the things you didn't do, because you don't get that time back.
It's true. It's very true. And you don't get that spontaneity and that freshness of thought about the whole thing. And
yeah, the fearlessness when we were going to live forever is gone.
Yeah. I know. That's freaking me out more than anything else. And I think for me, 2017 was the year between my partner and I, we lost about 30, 35, 40 people in our families and friends.
Oh my God.
That just all in that whole time period in 2017, 2018.
Oh,
that many
so
people
smart.
We lost. So we were just like in shock for a couple of years after that. And then COVID hit. And then we're just like, oh, you know, are you kidding me? And that really brought it home. Not getting any younger and everybody's dying. So what the hell am I waiting for? Whatever it is.
Yeah. That's a rude awakening. Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Ooh. That was tough. And I think we're still, COVID shock is still happening right now because now it's opening back up. Everything's moving super fast. Things were slower. I hate that COVID had to happen. But when that time was happening, oh my gosh, because I had to go out in it every day, there was nobody out. It was freedom on the roads. I was driving. There was nobody there. I was going, la, 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 la. I could do everything really quickly because you could run to the store and it took 2 minutes because there's nobody in line. There's nobody. I mean, you're terrified at the same time. But, but it was just like, it was kind of glorious in a lot of ways. Everything slowed down. So you just felt this freedom to move through the world at the pace you wanted to go. And so yes. I guess that's the part of it that I'm not celebrating COVID in any way, but but it was the feeling of the freedom to move at the pace that you needed to go, as opposed to the pace that was set by the
yes,
world.
The time of reflection, time mm-hmm. of reinventing yourself, mm-hmm. of purging, of what are my wants versus my needs? We mm-hmm. all were forced to do that, or mm-hmm. families were forced to get along with each other.
yeah, well.
I got to teach my kids what? There were divorces. It was scary, bizarrely scary on the one hand, but I think it was a renaissance on the other hand. Especially for creative types, because we had to keep our creativity going and had to be creative in figuring out that way to keep going. Painters paint. A lot of my actor friends, we were meeting once a week doing monologues via Zoom, or they were doing plays via multiple Zooms, Shakespearean play, and there's 50 people on your screen. And just to keep doing, just to keep doing, because we're all in this weird boat together. Musicians, my gosh, how many beautiful things have we seen where people like McCartney, the big musicians that got together, we saw all of their basements or all of their studios, and they were playing a song that we all knew all together on a Zoom call. Mm-hmm. Beautiful stuff. So we kept going. We were challenged, but we kept going. And people that maybe read books, of course, mm-hmm. I read books. Yeah, it was Twilight Zone time. It was a bad episode of Twilight Zone.
Yeah, it was.
The aliens were coming, or it was the end of the world. And yeah, I just recently saw a friend of mine that I hadn't seen in almost 2 years and just broke down and cried. We had our masks on, but we hadn't seen each other in person, and we just held each other in each other's arms. It was like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we're going to be nicer generation after this. Fingers crossed. Anyway.
We hope that. We always do hope that. We're humans, unfortunately, but we do try. But the thing that I'm always excited about artists, because our whole purpose is to create culture, and we make art, and that's what we do, and we kept doing that. And people who had skills in one particular art form would reach into a completely different art form. Like, a lot of people did baking or cooking and took it to the max and shared that and said, look what I've done and look how beautiful it is. And you wish you could smell it and taste it, because you're like, that's amazing. But they still were creating on that same skill level, but in a different field. And I thought that was pretty amazing, that it broke people out of these boxes.
Yes. Yes.
That was beautiful.
Or your dream or your fantasy. I've always wanted to blah, blah, but never had the time. Now right. You got the time. Mm-hmm. And thank gosh, the creative types did not cancel culture. We kept it going.
Yeah, we really did. And now it's a whole new world, because some things have been percolating that we haven't seen yet over the last year and a half that are going to start popping out. We're like, where did that come from? Oh my gosh. And it's really exciting to think about that there's going to be something that popped out of this that we just had no clue about, that other folks were creating someplace behind the camera, and it's going to pop out, and you're going to be like, yes, we've always needed that, or no, we don't need that.
Yeah, we don't want to go backwards.
But it's still, we're reaching and we're trying to create something new all the time, and that is always an exciting thing. So I'm glad for that. Is there anything on your bucket list that you haven't done that you really want to do,
acting wise? Because I'd say, you know, travel. I love to travel, and that's put on hold, of course. But I'm now back in the throngs of planning an Egypt trip with a girlfriend. Certainly, I've been asked this before, and I gave it a lot of thought about maybe a possible. What role would you like to ever attempt? Because so many actors do get stuck. We have our little bag of tricks, I call it. Okay, I can do the New York hooker. Or there's the go-tos. That's a character we've done 1,000 times. And mm-hmm. we just kind of resort to doing maybe a different version of that. We don't stop and really create. Mm-hmm. It's safer that way. And I think you should always attempt something that you're afraid of. You should always accept a job short of not losing your life. Oh, sure, I'll ride a horse into a ring of fire. No, I don't mean that.
Right.
But that it something like, I'm scared of this and I want to try it, because that's going to stretch out mm-hmm. your creative. That's going to get you out of your acting box anyway. And I've really never seen, it's been done, but I personally would love to try something of a female serial killer mm-hmm. or a female assassin. I think would be really fun. Mm-hmm. Now, I have an upcoming project that was postponed. It's going to be a series. We're going to start filming it in fall. I don't know what platform it's going to be assigned to. I don't know any of that. But I am playing a Polish grandmother mob boss.
Oh, my gosh. That's great.
Yeah. And I had to research all sorts of stuff just for the audition. And luckily it was right after lockdown. Anyway, I had some gray in my hair, and so I put the babushka on, and I studied a Polish accent, and she gave me the sides, the lines, and I memorized them, and I sent that to her, and I got cast. And I thought, oh, this is a real stretch. I cannot wait. It's a comedy, but it's going to be a lot of fun. And that'll be an interesting direction to go and to play with and to get a backstory and just to break that character down and build her into what she or my interpretation would be. But yeah, bucket list, those two different kind of female roles that you don't see a lot.
Okay.
I think Helen Mirren, I think, played in Red. She was a female Samson. Love that. Love her. Oh my gosh. It's Helen, for God's sake.
Yes.
She's my best friend. She just doesn't know that yet. But I would like to take it more into maybe the mind of a serial killer. And how they, there's no such thing as 100% villain. Mm-hmm. Hannibal Lecter was a gourmet chef. He loved classical music. He was an art aficionado. He just happened to like to eat people. Oops. But therein lies, okay, yes, that's evil. But he's human. There's other layers of humans. Marion the librarian. Oh, I'm always in it. Oh, she's got a dark side somewhere. Probably has a temper or kicks cats or something. I love finding the humanness in it because you can't portray, again, a villain as all evil. I try to get an audience to feel sorry or sympathy or side with the villain. Justify the reasons for the villain being bad, whether or not that comes out in the script. Just a part of the fun of the character building. But yeah, those are, if anybody out there wants to write something for me, contact me.
Yeah.
And but I think that would be, that's not done enough. And I'd like to see that or certainly attempt that somewhere down the pipe.
Have you done any directing or writing yourself?
I have directed a one act 1,000 years ago. I would love to direct. I will probably lose friends if I cast friends because I can be a real taskmaster. You're not late on my set. If you are a terminally late person, I will replace you. And I have a stable of actors that I can call upon to replace you, even if you're my best friend.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be so strict. So I'm thinking like, maybe that's not for me to do. I'm too anal about that. I was very fortunate enough to write in Los Angeles for the Imagen Awards, and that is Spanish for image.
Okay.
This started in the 80s. When I got on board, it was like the 7th annual or the 8th annual, and they awarded any part of media that represented Hispanics in a positive way, rather than drug lords. Think LA, Jimmy Smits and LA Law, Edward James Olmos, Rita Moreno.
Mm-hmm.
And it covered radio. It covered all sorts of things. I worked for a beautiful woman who helmed this award show with Norman Lear.
Mm-hmm.
And the second or third year I was assisting on it, because it's now in its 35th, 36th year, I got to write some of the introductions. Cesar Romero was being inducted as a Lifetime Achievement Award winner, and I got to write the introduction to him that Jimmy Smits would read. I got to write What is a Mahin that Edward James Olmos read. And that was, I could have died after that show and went to heaven. I bawled through the whole thing. My dad was a writer. And I'm sorry he wasn't around to ever be privy to that. But this little kid from Detroit got to write for these pretty big Hollywood hitters.
Right.
And I got to hear them read what I wrote. They didn't change anything. They didn't ad lib. And I was just astounded. I pissed off a lot of the professional writers that wrote the banter. Hey, Jimmy, hi. Isn't it fun being here at the 35th? I didn't write any of that. Those were the professional, old, grizzled, good old boys, Union Writers Guild of America guys that wrote all that.
Mm-hmm.
Helen, my boss, said, Kim, can you write? I said, yeah, I've written a few things. Okay, here. And I got to write that. And I won't name names, but one year, the mistress and master of ceremonies, they started the banter. They took the scripts. They crumpled it up and threw it on the floor and said, this is drivel. we're just going to do the show ourselves.
Wow.
And I'm sitting with the writers, and I think one of the writers' head just went right into a soup. And it was like, what are they going to do? Oh, my gosh. But again, when they got to the ones that I wrote, they read them verbatim. So these guys hate me. I think to this day, they want to kill me. But honored, so honored to. And that wasn't a goal. It fell in my lap and I did it. And it's like, wow, I've been too bad it wasn't televised or recorded. I don't think that was invented yet.
Right. But,
yeah, wow. It was Jurassic Park era. But yeah, so writing, I've done. I have an idea for a play that nobody has touched upon this subject. And I'm not going to say anything because then it gets stolen. I've thrown my idea out with some writer friends that said, you got to pen this. So I need a playwriting class to get this. So I couldn't go. It was COVID. I've got my outline. I've got stuff that I want to. It's on the back burner, but I have a play that I would like to pen, but I need to get better at playwriting. But thank you for asking, though. It was a great question. Thank you.
Yeah, well, that's perfect. It's, I'm excited for you because that looks like that's something that's really going to happen for you. Because you seem to be the person that will go get the thing that you really want. If I was able to help you remember, that's fabulous.
Well, maybe saying it will manifest it. So
yeah.
Thank you for asking.
Yeah. So where can people find you online?
On IMDb, you can check out the films that I'm in. I understand if you type my name in Amazon Prime, my films come up. This a girlfriend told me this in LA. So it's Kimberly Cruchon, Cruchon Brooks with no E on IMDb. And also if you type that on YouTube, I can't say channel. It's a YouTube page that you'll see that has my demo reel, some commercials I've done, some trailers of films I'm in, voiceover work. That's something, it's a link that I send to a lot of casting directors so that they can see bits and pieces of my work.
Okay.
And I have a Facebook page. My acting Facebook page is Kimberly Cruchon Brooks, and like me.
Thank you so very much, Kimberly. Thank you so much for being on my show. And I appreciate you sharing your stories and your wisdom and your humor and your experiences with us, and we'll have you back again because I want to hear about the thing that you pen when you pen it.
Thank you. You got it. We got a date. You too. A pleasure. I'd love to meet you in person, but a pleasure to meet you. Let's do this again sometime.
All right. We will. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you for joining us this week on Tia Time with Artist. Make sure to visit our website, tiaviolin.com, where you can subscribe to the show in iTunes and never miss an episode. Please leave us a rating wherever you listen to podcasts. We really appreciate your comments and will mine them to bring you more amazing episodes. I would like to thank this inaugural season sponsors, the folks at Jazz Alliance of Bend, Michigan, or JAM. Michigan ArtShare, a program of Michigan State University Extension, is a partner in supporting the Tia Time podcast and Sham Bones Music. Without their support, this podcast would not be possible. Thank you so much. If you would also like to contribute to the show, you can find us on patreon.com. If you want to continue the conversation about topics discussed on the show or start new ones with like-minded people, join us at the Tia Time Lounge on Facebook. Thank you for listening. See you next week at Tia Time. Thank you for joining us this week on Tia Time with Artist. Make sure to visit our website at tiaviolin.com, where you can subscribe to the show and never miss an episode. Please leave us a rating at Apple Podcasts to expand the reach of the show. We really appreciate that help. And we'd also like to say thank you so very much to our sponsors, Michigan ArtShare, a program of Michigan State University Extension, and Cold Plunge Records. And also all of our Patreon supporters. We couldn't do it without you. Thank you. We'll see you next week at Tia Time.